Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Askana for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv Askana PC. Today is March 28, 2013. This is a community conference call that we organize every other week, every other Thursday, wherein we answer questions posted on the forums, as well as answers that have not been posted. Note that this call is being recorded, so if you do not want your identity to be publicly known, you can conceal it, you can make up a name if you want to ask a question. Also, by participating in this call, you do not become our clients, nor do we become your lawyers. This is not an attorney-client call, basically a community information session. I will do, as usual, I will start with answering the questions that have been posted, and then I'll ask people if they have any follow-up on that which has been posted. Once that's taken care of, we'll start with new questions. I think we'll have plenty of time for new questions today. Most of the questions posted are pretty short. The answers are pretty short from what I could tell. Okay, so let's begin. The first message is posted is this is the way. User from our community of forums, a forum community. Question is, NOID of I-485 while on EAD. So the question here is this. I am on H-1. Once my H-1B expires, should I extend it or should I just go on EAD because my 485 is pending? I have a fairly lengthy discussion on this on my blog. You can go look it up there. But I'll just summarize it for you. The reason I like having an H-1 is precisely the reason you're worried. What are you worried about? What if I get a notice of intent to deny and then I get denied? The problem is this. Once I-485 is denied, the unlawful presence clock begins to tick. If you stay in USA for 180 days and you don't have an H-1, you are on EAD, then you are running unlawful presence. If you have an H-1, you're not unlawfully present. You're still on H-1. You can continue working. Unlawful presence of 180 days will get you 3 years barred from entering USA. So it's difficult to fight with USCIS when you have that 180-day sword hanging on your head. Even though NOIDs are not that common, but they are not exactly unknown. We deal with them all the time. So where there is a choice, you should stick to H-1 if possible. Okay? If your priority date is quite close, you know, if you're just about 6 months away from your priority date, or you have such a circumstance where H-1 extension is just not possible, and then you should go with EAD. Otherwise, stay with H-1. Another interesting question, actually, I had a very lengthy discussion about this with a couple of our clients last week. It appears that everybody is in the same situation. So I'm currently on ED. I'm not sure what ED means. I'm currently on ED. I think they mean EAD. Okay, I think that's what they mean. Yeah, because the next line makes it clear. My wife has EAD through my green card case also. Okay, so this is a common situation. The primary applicant is on EAD. The spouse of the primary applicant starts the company. Can I do an AC-21? Can I port over to my own wife's company? And the answer is yes. But keep in mind a couple of things. You can port over to your own company, whether it's an LLC, an Inc., an S-Corp, whatever it is. The only problem is the nature of your job shouldn't change. So let's say you have obtained a green card as a software developer. When you start your own company, all of a sudden you become the CEO or the vice president. That could become the problem. The problem is not itself with working for your own company. The problem is in the nature of the job. If your wife is managing the company and you are there just as an employee on a W-2, you can own the company. That's not a problem, 50%, 60%, even 100%. But you should not be the CEO because that changes the nature of the job. So they had four questions. Can I work under that company full-time? Sure, as long as you keep this in mind. Will there be any issues later? I try to avoid the situation simply because it's a relatively untested situation. But if there's a huge benefit and you don't mind a little bit of risk, or it is just not possible to go on with the current job, go for it. Okay. They want to know what should it be, LLC, Inc., S-Corp. That's something you should discuss with your local lawyers. Anything else I should consider? Just keep the job description or the job, you know, what you do, in fact, pretty much the same way. Okay? Next question is, Katraj wants to know about porting I-140 dates with the new employer. They have a valid I-140 with their old employer, but then started working with the new employer for the past 3 years. New employer has not started the green card. They want to do it next year. Old employer is saying they're going to revoke the I-140. If they revoke, can my new employer port the same priority date? Yes. And what if I lose the second job? Can I port it over to a third job? So if I tried porting it second time, can I port it third time? You can do it 300,000 times. Once the I-140 is approved, the priority date of that I-140 is your property. The only way it's going to get taken away under the current thinking of USCIS is if they revoke that I-140 for fraud or misrepresentation. Okay. So I think I covered it. Let's go to the next one, Rahul Gopal Joshi. Namaste, Joshi Saab, to you as well. Wife is completing an F1. She's going to go into OPT. So with the 90-day rule, if she cannot get a job, is it possible to change the status back to H4? Absolutely. When should that application be filed? Ideally before the 90 days of being out of work. Are there any caveats, points of concern? No, not really. Is it easier for her to actually pack and go back? Oh, no. Just convert to H4 here. One thing, Mr. Joshi, I would like you to know. This is, a lot of people don't know this. Actually, two things. On OPT, you are not required to have a full-time job. Number of hours, I don't remember. I think it's 25 or something like that. It doesn't have to be 40. I know that for sure. And second, it does not have to be paid employment. So if it's an internship or even a project which is being done on a pro bono basis with an employer, no problem. So just keep this in mind. So the 90 days are only when you are doing nothing. If you are working in your own field, whether even for a college professor, okay, as long as the project is in your own field of study, for example, let's say an IT guy comes to me and says, Rajiv, I'm running into the 90-day issue. Can you give me a part-time job? And the answer is yes. What can you do for me? Well, you can study our website and give us solutions to XYZ problems. Even though you work from home, as long as you're working X number of hours each week, 25 or 30, whatever that is, I think it's 25, and you're working without getting paid, it's legal. So remember that, okay? It's not legal for H-1B, but it's legal for F-1 OPT. Next question is from Deep. Deep says, and his handle is Deep MACT. Currently on L1, wife has an L2. So what happened was, when he entered USA, he was given an I-94 coextensive with his visa date, which is less than his approval date. So when he went back, they got it corrected, and now it's good till December 2013. His I-94 as well as his wife's I-94. Okay. So the first question is, can I get an L2 EAD extension all the way to December? Yes, you can. Okay. Can I apply H1 from a different company? This is the part I was a little unsure about. See, if you have an EAD, even if the visa expires, if you have an I-94, even if the visa expires, you are still in legal status within USA. Okay. Once again, visa expires, but the I-94 is still valid. You are valid in your L1. You are in valid status until the I-94 expires. So until the I-94 expires, then you continue working till that time. You can apply for H-1 through any company. I'm not sure there was anything else there. There's a twist there. But from what you have written, it appears to be no problem at all. Uday says, Uday01, I invoked AC21 joint company A in EB3 category. I did apply for EB-2 through another employer. Now the question is, he's got a letter from USCIS saying, well, you've got an I-140 EB-2. The question is, I'm working in an EB-3 type job with the current employer. Another job, which was EB-2 type job, I'm not working there. Can I file my I-485 with the current job, which is an EB-3 type job? No, you cannot. You cannot. Okay. Unless your current employer, let me just look at something. Yes, you have to file a perm application with the current employer under EB-2 in order for you to carry the EB-2 priority date of the old employer. See, with the current employer, you're doing EB-3. Old employer approved under EB-2. Since you're not going to go back and work for them, you can only file EB-3, although you can take the priority date of the old approval, which is EB-2. Okay? I hope that makes it clear. So unless your current employer files an EB-2 case, you cannot use the priority date of the EB-2 to convert yourself to EB-2. You can use the priority date of EB-2 in your current EB-3 case. Okay. Another underscore other, Opinder, he says, my wife is a part owner in a couple of S-corps. Now, this is a slightly different question. This is for naturalization, N-400. And my answer is to you is very simple. As long as she was an owner in an S-corporation, okay, in the employment history, it's better to just be over-informative rather than under-informative. So if you're in doubt about anything, either attach an addendum with an explanation. For example, you could just give her employment and then put an addendum that she had she was part owner in S-corps, but she was not actively involved in managing, etc. I prefer to give the whole detail, even the S-corp ownership that she had. I prefer to give all of that in the N-400. That, I think, is a better idea. And it should not be bothersome to you. I don't think it's going to be a problem. Next question is new 400. My wife and I filed jointly. Okay, so the question is this. They're married, but they've been filing taxes separately or singly. As long as it is legal to do that, I'm not a tax expert. I think it is. As long as it is legal to do that and you have an explanation for it, I don't see any problem at all. The fact that you have been filing taxes separately or singly, I don't think that should create a problem for the N-400. As long as it is legal under U.S. tax laws, you can talk to your accountant about that, okay? And the next question, again from New 400, was, can I take my wife with me to the N-400 interview? You can take her all the way to the door, but she may not be able to get into the interview with you, okay? So the N-400 interview is just about you. Next question is Ready 47. He has an interesting situation. He was on a student visa. He got it with great degree of difficulty because he got a 221G. It took 40 days to get the F1 visa approval. He came here, then he got assistantship in some other university, moved to that university in the following semester, went to India, and then again went for visa interview with the new I-20. Again got 221G, got visa after 20 days for 6 months, and the last visa was canceled without prejudice. That's fine. Again, transferred to another university to complete my master's as soon as possible. I've graduated recently and applied for OPT. I'm waiting for that. My visa expires in May. I cannot go back to India. What are my instructions? Well, you have no problem. Visa does not decide your status. Your I-94 does. Double check with your international students office, your DSO. Okay? I don't see any problem at all. I just mentioned that before, earlier in another conversation today. Remember, a visa is merely a permission to come to the airport in the United States. So let's say I have a tourist visa for 6 months, and it's expiring tomorrow. Okay? And I show up at the U.S. airport today. At the border, they give me 3 months stay in the United States. Now, tomorrow my visa is expiring. Can I stay 3 months? Absolutely. Because the stay is decided by my I-94. So, Mr. Reddy, I don't see any problem here. Next question is from Jitu, MACT, who wants to know, H-1B visa processing from a different company while L-1B extension is pending from current company. Here's the problem. If somebody is on L-1 and they're filing for an H-1B at the same time, what happens if an L-1B extension is filed and it gets approved after the H-1B is approved? Jitu, these are questions that are very difficult to answer because there really are no rules on this. There is something called last action rule. Nobody quite knows where it came from. Even senior USCIS lawyers, some people that I've spoken with, were not able to decide where this last action rule comes from. What is last action rule? If you have two cases pending, whichever is decided last, that will be your status. Okay. So if L1B gets decided last, you are on L1B. If H1B gets decided last, you are on H1B. Is that the way USCIS thinks about it? What about H1 that's only going to become effective on October 1st? Does the same rule apply? Nobody knows. Okay. So what is the smart thing to do? We plan for the worst case scenario. Okay. If L1B extension is rejected prior to October 1st and you've got 2-3 months gap, you can leave USA or you can change to another status such as H4 if your wife is on H1. If your L1B extension is approved after October 1st, you can only begin work on October 1st. I'm sorry, I take that back. If your L1B extension is approved after October 1st, you should revoke that, you should withdraw that. If you're going to start work on H1B, you should send out some kind of a letter to USCIS. It becomes complicated because L1B is not your application. At least make a phone call to USCIS, send a letter saying, I don't want an L1B. I am going to stay on my H1B. Okay. So, practical solution. I've got an H1B. There may be a gap when my L1B expires and October 1st. Plan to leave USA or change status. Second situation, L1B is not yet approved. H1B is approved. Extension is pending. Withdraw the L1B extension. You can do it through sending a letter to your employer as well as to USCIS. That's the best I can recommend. Also make a phone call to USCIS customer service. Hopefully, that should take care of your issue. What is the worst case scenario? You may have to apply for change of status back to H1 again, although I don't think it should work like that. Okay? But there is no clear bright line rule on this. Partha Sen Gupta says, change of status from H4 to H1B. Mr. Sen Gupta is saying that he likes our app. For those of you who don't know, we have an Apple app, which is good with both iPads as well as iPhones. If you go to, it's all over. It's on our website, the link, as well as on the forums. But if you go to iTunes and just do a search for immigration.com. That website is, app is called immigration.com mobile app. So immigration.com is the name of the app. You can pull it up. It's a free app. We would like to keep it free as long as I'm working. There's no need for us to charge anybody for it. And it has some nice features. I like the fact that I can just dictate something on the iPhone and push it out to all of you. So if something urgent is happening, I can push it out to all of you. I can push out text notices to you. And in the new mods that we are doing, we'll be able to send links, etc., to you as well. So we are all constantly going to be improving that. And we are also starting on the Android version. I don't think we'll do a Windows or a BlackBerry version, but we'll definitely do an Android version, which should be out within a few weeks. Okay? So here's the situation. I have worked in the U.S. from March 2010 till 2013, L1 through Company X. Spouse converted from L2 to H1B in 2012. She's in full-time job. Okay, so he converted to H4. All right. And he applied for a conversion to H4 but decided to leave. So there are two questions. There is a gap status gap, January 18th, 2013, till Feb 19th, just about a month. Well, first of all, that's not a problem because you, your H-4 application was submitted. In any case, anything less than 180 days will eventually get wiped off. So I'm not that worried about it. If you were out of status and unlawfully present for more than 180 days, I would be worried. Okay. Assuming that my H-1B gets approved, so he goes from H-4 to H-1, do I need to apply for a change of status in the U.S. before I start working in October 2013? So if he goes outside, gets an H-4 visa stamp and comes back, is it a risk for me to travel on H-4 right now and apply for change of status later for H-1B? So the question is, I'm filing my H-1B, I'm leaving. I'll be coming back on H-4. So when I come back, I'll have to apply again for change of status. Is that a risk? Well, remember one thing, Partha Saab. The biggest problem is whenever you apply for change of status, extension, transfer of H-1, they are all exactly like a new H-1. The whole H-1 is reopened. So the risk only is this, that you have to redo the whole thing. You can have the same problems, the same RFEs. That's the only risk. Okay? The next question from Siva CJ. Their question relates to AC-21. Okay. They have applied for I-140 that was approved. 485 was applied in Jan 2012. So I-485 is pending, and 485 has been pending for more than 180 days. Can I switch jobs now? As long as the jobs are substantially similar or same, definitely. Can I invoke my EAD and work as a consultant? Working as a consultant can become a little problematic because you need a W-2-based job. So potentially you could have a corporation for whom you get a W-2, and you can have 100% stock in the corporation. And you should still retain the same job. You should not be managing the company. Somebody else should be managing the company. You can own it, but you shouldn't manage it because then your job is not same or similar. I just described that in detail. Personally, I would like to avoid this situation because this is, like I said, it's a largely untested preposition. I worry about things going wrong. But if you have a good setup where somebody else is managing your company and managing it well and, you know, the company is doing okay, you don't have to have ability to pay wages, but you've got to have a genuine job. Okay. Does a new employer have to file a green card again? That's the whole point of AC-21. As long as they give you a same or similar job, you do not have to start a new green card. Okay? Saurabh 82, eligibility for seventh year H-1B extension. H-1B is expiring sixth year, September 28, 2013. Perm was filed December. So between September and December, October, November, about 3 months, you will not have any way to extend your H-1 for that duration. Can I go to H-4 for 3 months? Absolutely. Absolutely. No problem. And you will not be subject to the cap. Okay? You can also file an H-1B extension for unused H-1B days, and you can combine the two. So you can combine. Here's the interesting thing. Okay, your perm will be pending for 1 year on December 1st, 2013. You can apply for an H-1 six months ahead. So in June, you can apply for your H-1 extension, but it will only be effective December 23rd. It will be effective December 23rd, okay? And between September and December, if you have enough number of days that you were outside, you can combine all of them. So you can ask for an extension of 1 year and 55 days or whatever. And if there is still some gap, you can cover that gap by going on H-4. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Then Sarala 786, can I apply multiple H1B from different companies? Yes. You can apply one H1 from each company, different companies. One problem is, if the companies are related, USCIS wants to see an explanation why you are filing from related companies. Now, although technically they shouldn't be, but they have indicated that they will be. What is the range of or approximate charge or cost by attorneys? You know, it depends upon lawyers. Our fees are on, I can only tell you, our own fees. So I'm showing it to you. If you go to immigration.com and you look at the right-hand side right here, our fees. So if you click on this page, it tells you all our fees, including H1 fees right here. Okay. So different lawyers charge different things. You can check out our fees to sort of get an idea of what we charge, but I don't know about the others. Please explain the process of lottery for H1 in case of master's quota. You know, I'm not quite sure. Let me try to remember. I believe if there are more applications than there are visas in master's degree category within the number of days that they have allotted by April 5th, they'll have to do a separate lottery for master's degree. And I think the master's degree candidates, what did they do last year? I'm sorry, don't quote me on this. Let me update my entry on the blog. Let me double check that. I forgot what they did the last year. But let me explain to you what they're doing this year so far, what I do know. First of all, if more application than quota are received by April 5th, they'll run a lottery for all cases received by April 5th. So the race is not to April 1st. The race is to April 5th. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Whatever applications are received in these 5 days, if the number is more than the quota, they'll run a lottery for all of them. I am pretty sure there'll be some preference to the master's degree category, I think they might be doing master's degree lottery separately and bachelor's separately if there are more master's degree applicants than the master's degree quota. Okay. Until I update it, just think of it that way. Okay. So it's also being predicted that the quota might last several months. USCIS thought it will go away in the first 5 days. Other people are saying, no, we have looked at the trends. Maybe it will last longer. I have no way of knowing. We'll wait and we'll see. We are assuming the worst, and we are going ahead and filing all our applications within the first 5 days. Okay. The last question is from Joe. Joe has just written to thank our help because he was able to get the issue with his naturalization resolved, even though it took about 7-8 months. He got in touch with his senator's office, which is what we had thought he should do. So, guys, this done, let me just open the call for any follow-up questions. People who have posted, if you have any follow-up questions, let me get to you first, okay? Press 5-star on your telephones. Only those who have follow-up questions. 5-star. Let's start with follow-up questions. I see 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions. Very good. Let me get started with the person who logged in first at about 12:20 p.m. Area code 619. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Area code 619.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can hear you.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, my question is, are they still giving RFPs for TVU students?
Sir, have you posted a question?
Yes, yes, I did, about the H1B, Sarala, Sarala.
Which number question?
It's, I think, 16, 16.
can you apply multiple H1B from different companies? That's what you
Yes. Asked. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So your question was what again? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
Oh, I was asking, like, are they still getting RFPs for applying H1B if they are from TVU?
For TVU?
Yeah.
TVU people, well, first of all, I have been hearing from a lot of our TVU guys, as you remember, you may remember that we were very heavily involved with the TVU cases. A lot of them, whatever I could, I did without charging, and some that we could not, we did charge. But most of the TVU issues have been resolved, okay? Are they still asking questions? Let me put it to you this way. If you have not been outside USA since your F1 and you have not been reinstated, they are almost certainly going to question you about your status. But if you have been reinstated or if you have gone outside USA and come back, no problem, you'll be fine.
Oh, okay. I went out and came back.
You'll be fine. Okay. Did you come back on F1 only or you came back on H4?
Yes, on F1.
Did you use the same visa stamp or did you get a new visa stamp?
Same visa.
They can cause a problem with that. They might say, well, we don't consider you to be in status. You should have gotten a new stamp. But it's a difficult issue for me to decide for you. Worst case scenario is they'll give you the H1, they'll make you go outside USA for visa stamp.
Oh, they are giving queries like that. I heard they are not giving any RFAs for this. I mean, I'm not sure.
Right. You see, the thing is, if USCIS is careful, they look at everything, they might ask you to go outside US. Because technically, if you have been out of status, like TVU students were for no fault of their own, if you change schools, you're still required to go get a new visa stamp.
Okay.
Okay?
And
the stamp could be held to be not enough to wash away your status problem. So the worst case scenario, they could say, okay, we'll give you the H1, but go out and get a visa stamp first.
Oh, okay, but I mean, the only thing is that they should approve an H1, I think, right, for this.
Oh, yes. That is not unless you were involved in some kind of fraud and you took money for referring students to TVU.
No,
none of that is true for almost all the people that I spoke with. If there is no fraud, etc., the fact that you're out of status or you were out of status should not be a problem. They should still give you the H1.
Okay, and just one last question. You said that I can apply multiple H1Bs if the companies are not related. What do you mean by related?
By related, I mean if one company owns majority stock of the other company or both of them are owned by the same company or same group of individuals. There are several ways companies can be related. It isn't a difficult term. If they are related, people who own the company know it.
Okay. Okay, they are not related at all. So I'll not get an RFP because I fly to...
Yeah, they should not be a problem.
Okay. And the resumes have to be same, I think, right?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The resumes that have to be same, I think.
Yeah, relationship means there is some commonality in ownership somewhere.
Okay. No, I will ask about resume. Resume? My resume has to be same, I think.
Your resume has to be same?
Okay.
I don't understand that question. What do you mean your resume has to be same?
No, I mean, we for different projects, we had some different points, basically.
Okay,
so,
wait. Let me explain this to you. If you send your resume to a private company, making up experience or highlighting certain experience, it is no problem. But when you submit documents to the government, they have to be 100% accurate.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, got it.
Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Area code 703, my neighborhood. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Yeah, hi. I had a first question that if NOID is on EAD.
Okay, your voice is breaking up quite badly, but I can understand you. You have the first question about NOID. Go ahead, ma'am.
Yeah, my question was, like, does a P period of unlawful presence starts immediately the moment we get NOID, or do we get a chance to appeal?
No, no. Here's the question she has asked. She's saying, does the unlawful presence begin immediately, or do we get a chance to respond? That's the way it begins. Well, let me tell you how it works. When you get a notice of intent to deny, they give you a certain number of days, typically 30 days, to respond.
Okay.
Your unlawful presence begins only after you have submitted your response and on the date they actually deny the 40, not before then. So first you'll get the NOID. After 15, 20 days, you respond. After 15, 20 days, USCIS revokes or denies the I-485. It's the date of the denial your unlawful presence begins. And there is no appeal against an I-485 denial.
Okay.
You have to change your telephone. I can't understand anything you're saying.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Your voice is breaking up very, very badly.
I'm sorry about that. I just have one more question. Would this, cannot continue to work after that?
I am really sorry. I cannot understand a word of what you just said.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry. Yeah. Area code 937.
Hi. Mine is 11th question.
11th question. Let me go to it.
Yeah.
From Reddy 47.
Yes.
The student visa issue where you got the first visa, then you got the second visa, and now the question is, my visa is expiring. So what do I do? Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, actually, I mean, do you want me to apply H-1 as soon as possible? I mean, if I'm an OPT, I mean, there are chances of...
When does your OPT expire, Mr. Reddy?
I have just applied and I'm waiting for the OPT. I did not go ahead.
If you want to, you can apply for H-1 right away. Are you a STEM graduate?
Yes, sir.
See, if you're a STEM graduate, you have another 17 months of OPT possible. I don't see why you should lose that.
Actually, I mean, the thing is that if there's any emergency in India, I can't go back to India.
Oh, emergency. But, you know, even getting H-1 visa stamping is quite difficult.
So, that's pretty.
What kind of job are you getting? Are you going to be working directly or through some kind of vendor arrangement sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm going to through some kind of vendor.
Yeah, see, then I don't know what is your best shot. Should you be going through another student visa or should you go through H-1? I'm not sure what is the better option. Personally, again, there is absolutely no logic to what I'm saying. Personally, I think maybe F-1 is better.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you stay on OPT, I think it may be better.
Okay, and I don't know what are the chances of visa issue after H-1. I mean... So pretty confusing in my stage. If I get again 221G, it might be a big problem.
I agree with you. I think either way it's a problem because you could get another 221G on your OPT. You could also get a 221G on your H1. Everybody else is getting it. So it's really not, I don't think I have a good answer for you. I think they're both risky. But I would probably go with student visa since I've already gotten it twice.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Okay. By the way, I have a question for you. The last university where you finished your degree, is it an accredited university?
Yes, it's an accredited university.
Then you should be okay. I would go with the student visa, Mr. Reddy.
Okay, sure. I mean, I'm waiting for my OPT, and I don't know whether it was going to be approved or not.
Why not? It should be approved.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Good luck, Mr. Reddy.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. And the last question for people who had posted. Area code 920. Go ahead, please. 920.
Namaste, Rajivji. This is question number 5.
5. Namaste, ji. 1 second. Haan ji, Joshi sahab, how are you?
बस मैं ठीक हूँ सर, आप कैसे हैं?
वेरी गुड, चलो.
मेरा क्वेश्चन ये था कि विद रिस्पेक्ट टू माय क्वेश्चन, एक यू नो वी डिड अ चेंज ऑफ स्टेटस वंस बिकॉज एज आई
Yeah, that's
इंडिकेटेड
not a problem, Mr. Joshi. If you went from H4 to F1 and you want to go back to H4 for your wife, it's not a big deal at all. That's fine.
Okay, because do you like have to provide additional explanation because they might say ki, you know, you did that so that you could
no,
I don't
not
know,
at all.
Get a job and then you for
no,
you know
no,
whatever unfortunate reasons you couldn't and now you want to stay in the US, which is why you are converting to H4.
I don't see any problem here.
Okay. So you don't really need to.
The government can ask anything they want. But
mm-hmm.
as far as the law is concerned, there is no issue here at all.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So you don't really have to explain it unless and until there is a specific question regarding that.
I do not believe that you will have to. No, sir.
Okay. Okay. I have one more other question, but I think I'll wait for the follow-ups because it's unrelated.
Okay. Just one second. Then let me just go on to the one more question from the follow-up.
Sure.
Area code 713, go ahead, please. 713, go ahead.
Can you hear me, Rajiv?
Oh, perfectly.
Okay. This is the thread number 3.
Thread number 3, okay. And this is, can I work full-time with
yes.
a company owned by my own spouse? And you are on EAD, I assume.
Right. I'm sorry for the typo over there, first of all.
What about it? I understood what you were saying. So, go ahead.
Okay. So there one thing which I forgot to explain over there is that the situation of my wife. She came on H4 initially with me. She got her own H1B and she is working on that H1B. She got my EAD and is still continuing her job where she is. Is there anything that has to do with what I have asked?
No, it doesn't change anything. The only thing it changes is this. If she starts her own company and starts managing it, she will no longer be on H1, she'll be on EAD for both her full-time job and for managing her own company.
Okay.
That's
all right. And as long as I keep my position in that company under the same status which I filed GC, I'm good to work full-time with that under that company.
Okay. So let me understand your question. This is actually interesting. This is exactly the same question I was asked, I think, day or two before. In a private consultation. The question is this. I am working with this company who gave me my green card, who started my green card, and I continue working with them full-time. On the side, if I start working for a second company, does that create any problems? Is that what you asked me?
No. I'm saying if I switch from the company who gave me a GC and join the company my wife is starting full-time.
As long as the nature of your job doesn't change, you should be okay.
Okay, so same position and same kind of job.
Yeah, don't get into management.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
I got it. Another quick question is, filing AC-21, how effective and required is that? What I remember is that you used to file and you never used to get a response. You don't even know what happened to that.
You still don't get a response, but it goes in the right place. So not a problem. I prefer
okay.
to file than not to file.
Okay.
Okay.
That
right now,
good.
I'm filing a motion to reopen for somebody. In fact, I think that motion should go out today. For somebody who contacted us a couple of weeks ago, he did not file AC-21, changed company, old employer revoked the I-140. USCIS did not give him a chance to even explain. They just sent him a 485 revocation.
Okay.
Now what is happening is he doesn't have work authorization because he was on EAD, and he's accruing unlawful presence. Of course, it will be reinstated because, you know, this is just not right. This is illegal. But what if there is, for some reason, it doesn't get reinstated when he has unlawful presence?
Okay. Wow.
It's a very difficult situation to be in. I don't like it. That's why I always file AC-21 now.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rajiv. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Abhijit. Good luck. All right, guys.
Thank you.
any questions whatsoever, press 5-star, any questions at all. New, old, about the weather, astrology, romance, doesn't matter. No, only immigration options. Okay, 1, 2, 3 questions is what you've got. Starting again in the order in which people logged in. Area code 619, go ahead, please. Area code 619. Okay, I'm leaving you open. Area code 585. Right. Oh, I muted again. One second. Area code 585.
585, Rajiv sir, Naveen. Naveen, I spoke to you this Monday.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you. Is 619 also on the phone?
Yes, sir. Sorry.
619, please wait. Let me finish with Naveen ji first. Naveen ji, go ahead.
Nope. Rajiv, so one of the things I missed in our discussions on Monday was that I could recapture 89 days of my H1. So February 2014, February 2nd, 2014 is when my H1 is going to expire. So 89 days to that would be April 27, 2014. So I still am in the fifth year until April 27, 2013. So the new employer, can I transfer my H1 and then the new employer apply for the green card immediately?
Okay. So you have 1 year and 89 days left.
27 days left from today.
Okay. The question is, if I change over to new employer and they start my green card right away, is there a possibility I will not have any interruption in my H1? Is that the question?
Yeah, for example, seventh year extension or whatever. I mean, can I continue the job?
And the answer is probably not, and I'll tell you why. First of all, there are only two ways you can get H1 extension beyond 6 years. One is tied in to the green card stage, and the other one is tied in to the green card time. Stage-based H1 extension is available only if form is approved and then I-140 is approved. In the stage-based H1, we don't care when you file your green card. So the race is to either get step 1 and step 2 approved before your current H1 expires, 6 years, or go the second prong, which is based upon how long ago was your green card started.
Right.
Once your green card was started 12 months ago, you can start getting H1 extension.
Okay.
So in order for us to get you your H1 extension, either your green card must be filed with 12 months to spare, or your I-140 must be approved within that time. If there's a gap between the filing and the 12-month period, if there's a 2-month gap or a 3-month gap, you will either have to convert status to something like H4, or leave USA for that number of months.
Okay. So example, the new employer, I can complete all the activities in terms of getting an approval of I-140 by January 2014. I still can get an H1 by February, right? That's what you meant.
Yes, you'll be able to get a 3-year extension.
Okay. So there is a possibility even if the perm is applied late, but if they can get everything working, I mean, get an approval by January, then I don't have to worry about it, right?
It does happen, not very frequently these days, because they are auditing 40-50% cases right now, perm cases. So perm gets delayed 7, 8, 9 months. But you know, there is always a possibility, even though it's not a probability.
Okay, and I can always leave the country for so many months and then recapture them, right?
Yes, and you are not subject to the quota unless you've been outside USA for 12 months.
Okay, all right.
Good luck, Naveen.
Thank you, Rajiv.
Welcome. Go ahead, area code 619.
Yes, sir. So my question is that when both of the H1Bs get approved, can I keep both of them?
Okay. So if you have filed H1 through two companies and both mm-hmm. of them get approved effective October 1st, can I keep both of them? Is that your question?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, interesting yes. thing is, if you had asked me this question about 5 years ago, I would have said without any doubt, absolutely yes, no problem at all. Okay? Now, I would say it is probably safe to do it only for about 60 days. So by about December 1st, you must decide which company you finally want to work with. So let's say you joined company A mm-hmm. and you requested company B to hold your H1 and not revoke it because you would not be able to join them for 60 days. You worked for 35, 40, 50, 55, even 59 days with company A, and then you moved over to company B. That's fine.
You
worked for 50 days with company A, then you decided you wanted to try company B. You worked there for 15 days. You came back within 60 days for company A. I think that's okay.
Okay. And my next question is...
Now, let me tell you this. This is a very fuzzy answer. This is not an exact yes or no answer because there are many issues that I'm thinking in the back of my head. But all things combined, I think with that combo, you should be okay, 60 days.
Okay. And my next question is, so you told me that because of my situation of EVU, I may get RFEs to re-enter the country. So if it gets approved, and will the stamping be easy if I have to re-enter again?
Stamping, sir, is not easy for anyone. Okay. So, but I can tell you this, that just because you had a TVU problem should not make your stamping any more difficult than it already is.
Okay.
So forget about the TVU problem. That's not going to bother you for the stamping.
Okay. That's it, I think.
Okay. Well, very good. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Oh, sorry.
I have only one more question left. Area code 920. Go ahead, please. 920.
Namaste, Rajivji. This is Rahul Joshi again.
Adi Joshi.
Namaste, sir. Two questions here. First of all, it is regarding, you just talked about the perm timing and H1B extension. It has to be before 1 year, right? At least.
Right.
So my question is, when you say before 1 year, does it include the amount of time in your first 6 years that you did not use, say, you travel to India, or does it exclude
You can recapture all that time, Joshi sir.
Right, but when do you start going back? Like, what is the date you go back for 1 year? Is it including the recapture time or excluding the recapture time?
Okay, let me explain to you how this works. So let us say on January 1st, I filed your perm application.
Okay.
On December 31st, 1 year is over.
Mm-hmm.
January 1st, you are entitled to 1 year H1 extension.
Right.
Let's say in the last 6 years, you've been outside for 90 days.
Right.
Now, I can actually combine 90 days with 1 year. So I can get 1 year 90 days extension. I can front load that extension all the way back to 90 days, and instead of filing on January 1st, beginning January 1st, I can begin your H1 90 days before January 1st.
Okay.
You see my point?
So okay. Can,
instead of waiting
can I,
for all 12 months, I'll be waiting 9 months approximately.
Right. Now, can I give you an example here from my side?
Sure.
Okay. So, typically, H1 is approved starting in October, right? First.
October 1st, your H1 is approved, yes.
Okay, so let's say, let's take the actual situation. So let's say my H1 is expiring first 6 years based on October approval on September 30th of next year.
Mr. Joshi, Mr. Mishra, I lost you there for a second. What did you say?
Okay. So based on the October 1st approval, my 6 years are expiring next year, September 30th, right?
Next year, September 30th, your 6 years are expiring. Okay.
Correct. But then out of these 6 years, I mean, out of these 6 year period, I was visiting India for some time. So that gave me additional around, say, 2.5 months. And that date goes to around, say, December 1st, 2014 with the recaptured dates.
So you've got 2.5 months to recapture. Now, what is the next question?
Right. So the next question is, now when it comes to perm timing, when they say it has to be 1 year before your H1 expiry, does it have to be 1 year before September or does it have to be 1 year before December?
It has to be 1 year before December because you're going to front load those 2.5 months.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay. Okay. So that was one question. My second question was, when we have, the job description set for a corresponding perm petition. Hello?
I'm listening.
Yeah. And if it is supposed to be for EB2 type of petition, should the job description explicitly say either it requires advanced degree like master's or, PhD, or at least 5 years experience? I mean, should it explicitly say that?
Absolutely.
One of these two.
Absolutely. If your job requirements do not specifically require an advanced degree or bachelor's with 5 years of experience after bachelor's, you cannot qualify for EB2.
Okay. Now, when you say, so it has to be either or. Am I right?
It can be either or both.
Okay, either or on both. Okay. Now, in the second case, let's say, does it have to be a closed-ended condition or a open-ended is okay too? So let's say if it says bachelor's degree and 3 to 5 years experience.
No good.
Would that be?
No such thing as 3 to 5 years experience. 3 to 5 years experience means 3 years experience.
Okay, so it has to be, okay. Okay, I think I got the answer.
Yep. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, Rajivji. Thank you, Rajivji.
You're welcome. Okay, it looks like there's one more question. So the last one for the day, then I have to leave, guys. Area code 619 again?
Yes, sir. Sorry for repeated questions.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, for my scenario, the TV thing. So, have you got any RFEs and what kind of RFEs you normally get and were you able to resolve them?
TVU cases, XPVU cases, even Northern Virginia University cases. We've gotten RFEs about status, and typically they have involved mostly those cases where the students are still in USA and they use CPT. So, the RFEs have focused more on things like where did you live? Were you living close to the campus? Did you attend classes on campus? Your CPT was authorized and you were working in Minnesota, but your university is in Virginia. How did you attend school? Show us your receipts for books that you bought.
Yes,
those kind of.
Yeah, but so will we be able to easily answer them, or is it going to be tough?
Never lost a case that I can remember.
Oh, okay. So they'll be surely asking this question and telling me to re-enter again. Maybe that.
No, I'm not worried about that. I think you'll be okay. The TVU issue is not a big problem.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much for your help. Really, thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Well, guys, good to have you all here, and I will.